The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones that you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/goodfootball and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way, we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/goodfootball, GOODFOOTBALL. Thanks for your help.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined, as always, by Mr. Denny Carter. We're here to talk the latest NFL news, including Lamar Jackson going public with his trade demand from the Baltimore Ravens. It's March 27th. He said he made it on March 2nd. Sean McDermott issuing what is becoming a now annual plea for Josh Allen to be less Josh Allen-y and to not run as much and do the things that make him special. Yep. The 49ers basically admitting that the Trey Lance era is over seemed like kind of a big deal. They did it in kind of like a back, like under the radar way, but basically in so many words said they're moving on from Trey Lance. So some people might not agree with this interpretation. I might be reading into it very strongly, but seemed like they were signaling the end of the Trey Lance era. They called Brock Purdy the starter and basically said Trey Lance is available for trade.
Some folks affiliated with Roto World told you this 3 months ago.
They did. And we're going to talk about something else we've talked about a lot. Sean Payton maybe not liking Russell Wilson. DJ Shark signing with the Panthers. Denny, of course, since he is 50% of this podcast, has insisted on another Samaje Perine segment, even though we already did one.
Yeah, during our pre-show call, which could be a show in and of itself, I think.
It could. It gets rather lengthy.
Yeah, and we talked. I said, we got to talk about Samaje Perine. And Pat said, we've already done that.
We've already done that, but we're going to do it again.
But he talked to the press. We need to update it.
He talked to the press. And we need to get to an article Denny wrote last week up on the site. It's been doing numbers, by the way, Denny. Four underrated running backs for 2023, including J.K. Dobbins, Mr. Captain James Cook, and two others we will save for the segment. Real quick, Denny, though, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, how's your bracket going? You love college basketball, right?
Yes, listen, you won't believe this. I entered one bracket tournament with my family and friends. I think I told the folks that last week. And folks, I am very pleased to tell you that I won the tournament.
You already won?
I already won because obviously only the Joker would have any of these teams in the Final Four. Okay. What do we have? Florida, AT&T.
Florida Atlantic, colloquially known as FAU.
FAU. We have Miami, UConn, and who else? Oh, San Diego State.
San Diego State,
which is a university, apparently. Yes, and sorry, if
folks are listening, the Aztecs have a rabid fan base. So,
but I am an East Coast elitist. I intentionally don't know anything about the West Coast. So I won because here's what I did, Pat. I don't know anything about college basketball. I don't pretend to be a thought leader. I lead thoughts in other sports. I save it for golf, for football, whatever. I don't pretend with college basketball. But here's what I do know. I know the tendencies of the people in my family and friends circles, right? So I just banked on them putting Maryland in the Final Four.
As one does.
Maybe putting Virginia in there just because they know, okay.
They've heard of UVA, as it's known.
That's right. My son, okay, I know this sounds funny, but my son's name is Xavier, So I figured that some people in this family and friends tournament would push Xavier way too far in this tournament. And so I had, I basically just had all those teams out early and I won. It's easy. It's that easy. You leverage the biases of other people.
You did without even knowing it. You picked against two known chokers as well, UVA and Sean Miller, the head coach of Xavier.
Oh yeah.
Who couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag at Arizona. And UVA, who has won a national championship and then every other year loses to a double digit seed in the first round.
That's right. I did see that stat. Can I ask, is the coaching particularly bad this year? Because the little bit that I've seen, it's truly like the worst coaching possible. I know that you are on the stop with the quick two.
Oh yeah.
You're on that bandwagon, right?
Well, it's funny. The coaching is actually way better than it used to be.
Really?
Yeah. There's a lot less gut. There's not nearly enough fouling when they're up three with like 4 seconds left. And yeah, man, there's been, I'm beginning to worry. The analytics say you need to go for a quick two. So I've never seen so many quick twos in my entire life when the situation clearly calls for bombing a three pointer.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been the year of the quick two.
And yeah, every game I see you and other people is tweeting, what's with the quick, stop doing the quick two?
Yeah, the quick two is a quicker way to die, basically.
Right. So the idea is you get the quick two, then you foul, you hope they miss one free throw, and then you either tie it or
you
win.
You don't have to take a three.
You don't have to take the three.
But the announcers yell. Sorry, that's how they yell it.
Well, because the thing about college basketball is no one can make a shot.
No one can make a shot. Yeah, producer Adam says it's extending the game, which is kind of true. Say you're down three with 13 seconds left. You don't have to – you can go for a quick two. And say you go for a quick two, but there's like 6 seconds left, then the other team just makes both of its free throws. And like you're in the same situation only with seven fewer seconds.
And producer Adam says you are relying on someone on the team in the lead to mess up. And that's – I think that's like – basically trying not to lose rather than trying to win. It just strikes me as that way. I will say, I don't know what the analytics say. If they do say you go for the quick two, then I concede to the analytics.
No, the analytics have been fired, if that's what they say. The analytics are coming under increasing duress, but we're coming under increasing duress for not starting the show under duress for the better part of a year now. The Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson, who just can't seem to figure out how to like each other anymore. They do not like each other. Man. They are what I believe you would call loggerheads. Lamar Jackson wants out. The Ravens are unwilling to pay Lamar Jackson. They seem to regard themselves as a victim, like of the Deshaun Watson contract. Like, well, listen, you don't understand. The contract was bad, so we can't match it.
Yep.
Or Lamar's being like, well, obviously you have to match it.
I'm not playing.
Yeah, because that's how it works.
Yep.
And now Denny, yep, he requested a trade March 2nd. He's officially trying to force his way out of Baltimore. I mean, this has been a crazy situation. We've talked about it so many times, and like, I just don't even know what there is to say anymore. I think I've seen it take a few times that he basically needs to go on the record that he will sit out regular season games unless they trade him. And that does seem to be the final avenue for him. And he needs to be willing. He needs to be like really willing to be Le'Veon Bell, and he does need to be willing to set out regular season games. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
I think it's over for Lamar and the Ravens. He'll never play for them again. He can't come back to that environment. So the team needs to operate as if he will never again wear a Ravens uniform.
Let's say it. He'll never again wear the purple and black. Come on, say it.
And he's going to have to get that big damn Ravens tattoo removed. He has a big Raven across his chest.
His people are working on that. Denny's interns are working on that.
They know
how to turn that into a horseshoe or a falcon bird pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, and the GM for the Falcons said recently, are the Falcons interested in Lamar Jackson? The answer is no for a multitude of reasons, including good and bad things are the same, and we don't really want
to. And that's when he named his fist. This one is Desmond Ridder, and this one is Taylor Heineke.
Right. The GM said, did you see the news? We got Heineke. We don't need Lamar.
We did see it. Renewals are down. Please, Falcons fans, please renew your season tickets.
Yeah,
we promise Taylor Heineke will take a step forward.
For Taylor Heineke, yes. I will say that the NFL, the league, the owners have made a great decision here to make a stand, to take the stand against an upstanding citizen, a guy with an unblemished record, a guy, a former MVP, the most exciting player in all of football, I guess, arguably, maybe Mahomes.
A young man with actual cultural cachet, too.
Yes. And you make the stand against him and not the other guy, you know, and not Watson. Like, that, like, Watson was the guy to take a stand against, and they didn't do it. So now they're doing it against Lamar, and it's catastrophic, and it's such a bad look. It's such a bad look. But, yes, I do believe that his days in Baltimore are over, and I think that there's a pretty not a pretty good chance. There's a chance. I used the term non-zero the other day, and people got furious. What does that mean? I'm trying to say there's a small chance, okay? So maybe I should just say that. There's a small chance he doesn't play this year.
I think it's more than a small chance he doesn't play this year at this point. I would say it's like 33 to 40% chance he probably doesn't play, because he's been making it clear for months, one way or another, that he's done with the Ravens. He's now officially confirmed it. Like, the Ravens, the NFL's, yeah, like, official legal position seems to be two wrongs make a right. Like, since that bad contract happened, we're going to do our wrong and it's not pay him now for some reason. And they seem to think this is like a tenable position. And I think that he seems basically like he's going to dig in, and he's like ready for the fight. He's almost like relishing this more than playing right now. Like, cause what's a better cause than being the quarterback of the Ravens? A better cause is being right.
Yeah.
And he's right that they need to just pay him. And like, it's totally unjust. And I think there's a fairly high chance he sits. I would say, yeah, where you said non-zero coward, what does that even mean? I'm saying I'm going with a much more exact, fairly high chance.
I thought my take was bold, but yeah, okay, let's go with that. Let's do it.
It's just like, what would compel him to report at this point?
Well, and basically what you're saying, and I think that you're right in saying that it would take an owner, an NFL owner, going completely rogue in order for Lamar to get what he wants here.
Yeah, I mean, there's just straight up, I mean, don't want to get sued for libel, but like collusive-like activities going on here where there's an understanding, maybe unspoken, that no one can break rank on this. And like, we've got to rein in these fully guaranteed contracts, and none of these owners are going to be the guy that does like the next one. Well, and they're just determined, and they're not going to let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, and I know, you know, I know what you're saying, and you can't call it, you can't prove collusion, but we're not the ones saying it. Like, the players union is saying this, okay, is using the C word to describe what's happening.
Don't say it. Costini, you're already on thin ice. Don't say it.
It rhymes with illusion.
Anyways, I got you off track there, but
yeah.
I mean, this is classic. It's going to get worse before it gets better. Like, this relationship. And I don't think there's going to be a come to Jesus moment where Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta have decided, all right, we're going to pay him. And I don't think he's going to accept anything less than the Watts. I mean, maybe he will, but man,
I do love the argument. People say, well, he needs an agent, when the reality is, if he had an agent, the agent would have roped him into a worse contract by this point, or the agent wouldn't have been able. It has to be a super agent. It has to be an agent like so well connected with NFL ownership that they could land some sort of deal that would satisfy Lamar and satisfy the team. So unless he has that going for him, there's no way that he would have gotten what he wanted. So you're basically saying he should have gotten an agent, so he got a bad deal.
I think basically what's going to happen, I believe July 15th is the deadline for if your franchise tag player to sign a long-term extension. And if he hasn't signed his tender by then and there's no long-term deal by then, I think he actually is going to sit out. Yeah. Maybe not the entire season. He might come back however many games you need to play to accrue a season toward your pension or whatever. But if there's no long-term deal and there's a zero indication there's going to be a long-term deal, that he's not going to sign his tag until like October or November, or he's just not going to sign it, period. And he's going to sit out for, if not the whole year, a large chunk of it. And fantasy managers need to begin planning accordingly.
You know, we could see a non-Lamar Ravens offense with their new offensive coordinator and his history of, you know, sometimes establishing it, but a lot of times letting it rip. The Ravens could be sneaky pass heavy, you know, lots of target volume for a guy like Mark Andrews. I don't think it's necessarily bad for Andrews that Lamar's leaving.
Who is the core? Oh, I was wondering if it's Todd Monken. Man, he is. He likes to throw.
He does. He does. So yeah. I mean, if you could ramp up the pass volume in Baltimore, Mark Andrews could go nuts here.
And when they like to throw a lot, Denny, one guy they'll be doing it to, their new number one receiver, Nelson Aguilar.
Oh, all right. There we go.
Where my Aguilar head's at?
That's a great Baltimore signing, man. You got to be over 30. And you got to be pretty much washed up.
And you've had to have at one point gone viral in your career for not catching.
If you have those two boxes checked off, you're in. You're a Ravens receiver through and through. He's in the right place. I'm actually shocked that Jarvis Landry doesn't play for the Ravens yet.
I'll ask a very, very bleak question because Nelson Aguilar is not the number one receiver. It's Rashad Bateman, of course. But who, sitting here today, who do you think scores more fantasy points in 2023? Rashad Bateman, who's been hurt a lot through two NFL seasons, or Nelson Aguilar, who is Nelson Aguilar?
I mean, I feel like I have to say Bateman. I mean, assuming
I think it's still Bateman. Yeah, just because he's not the first guy who's been hurt a few times early in his career.
Well, and also, I mean, if I'm applying the same logic of the Todd Monken pass heavy scheme with a new quarterback, then yeah, Bateman would maybe even be a value.
Yeah, he probably will be a value. He was anything but a value his first 2 years in the league. Yeah. One of the lower returns on investment in terms of like ADP.
When you have a rushing quarterback, like a guy who's in the top 2, 3, 4 rushing attempts every year among quarterbacks, that kind of offense really can't support two fantasy relevant pass catchers, right? So you got to choose, I think, in the situation, which that was the knock against Bateman for me all last summer. It was like, so you're telling me you're going to draft Andrews where he's going in the second round or whatever, and you're taking Bateman in the, what, the sixth, fifth, something like that?
It was high. I don't remember. It was very high.
So this Ravens offense is going to, I don't know, completely change from the way that it's been. You got to pick and choose. You got to say volume is limited, so I'm going to have to go with this guy or that guy.
Just thank God Nelson Aguilar is not a running back, because otherwise you would have been talking about drafting him this entire segment.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
You would end somehow, but this is the reason you don't draft running backs, so you don't have to draft the Nelson Aguilars of the world. Nelson Aguilar, highly unlikely to become a 2023 fantasy commodity, but Rashad Bateman really, really needs to stay healthy. Yeah. Denny, highly unlikely to become a 2023 fantasy commodity is Trey Lance, because his team continues its public turning on him. Mm-hmm. They still seem to think he's a nice young man, so they're not turning on him in that regard, but they just don't seem to be a big fan of the Trey Lance quarterbacking. 49ers GM John Lynch said Monday that Brock Purdy is basically going to be the week one starter if he's healthy. Luckily for Trey Lance, we don't know if he's going to be healthy. But like, also unluckily for Trey Lance, he basically left the door open to a trade where he did the classic like GM thing, like listen, we answer every phone call, man. Except for they never ever say that when it's someone they don't want to trade. Basically admitting they were open for business on Trey Lance, which, I mean, do you think the situation has deteriorated to the point for Trey Lance where even if Brock Purdy's not healthy, Trey Lance won't be starting and then it'll be Sam Darnold in week one? Or do you think that if Purdy's not ready, they'll give Lance one last ride?
I think Shanahan would do anything to never have Trey Lance drop back again in the 90s.
It does seem that way. It's why did they make this move?
He doesn't like Trey Lance the way he fits. I'm sure maybe he likes him personally, whatever. He seems to be a hard worker. He lives in the team facility, apparently, according to 49ers beat writers. So this is not a knock on Trey Lance. In fact, I kind of hope he goes elsewhere so he gets a chance to shine. Like he gets a chance to show what he can do as a rusher. Maybe he improves as a passer. And I know he only played, two games last year. I get that. But buddy, those two games were awful. Yeah. I'm talking like off the charts bad as far as accuracy, as far as passing efficiency.
And he does have a family. I mean,
it was it was frightening, I think, from a fantasy standpoint. Not if you drafted Lance, because you say, okay, it doesn't matter. This guy's going to rush for 100 yards and a touchdown, whatever. I'll be fine. But if you drafted Ayuk, Kittle, Debo, anybody in that offense, you said, well, it's over. Like, I might as well not even look at my team anymore because this offense is going to be horrendous, this passing offense. I don't think there's any way that Shanahan falls back on Lance, even if Purdy's not ready, which is a good possibility considering the extent of his injury.
I'm not a Lance truther, but I do know a Lance truther would point out driving rainstorm in Chicago in week one. They were basically playing a tropical depression. And week two, broke his leg, didn't he?
Before the broken leg, it wasn't good.
The bigger problem is just not what he's done on the field, because plenty of young quarterbacks have looked horrible in their first five or six career starts or whatever. It is just the total lack of commitment from the 49ers.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
They're already saying about Brock Purdy, which is what they would never, ever say about Trey Lance last year even. Like, they kind of committed to him, but, like, it was, as people remember, it was, like, as half-hearted as could possibly be. It was – everything was always kind of qualified and vague. And, like, they didn't trade Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, some people will say that's because Jimmy Garoppolo made himself impossible to trade by the way he timed his surgery. But they've already gone in harder on Brock Purdy, I think, this offseason than they did on Trey Lance last offseason when they had to start Trey Lance. Oh, yeah. And it just seems like they've underthink that this was a massive, massive blunder. And Kyle Shanahan weeps himself to sleep every night wondering why he didn't draft Mac Jones.
I will say that I would still want to draft Trey Lance in like best ball drafts while his fate is unknown, because I think there's a pretty good shot, according to what we heard today and just generally what they say about Lance, that he ends up starting elsewhere next year. And you know, he's a highly mobile, very good running quarterback. That means a lot, obviously, in fantasy. I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. So I'm not saying that he's like a dead letter for fantasy. In fact, things could be really good for him for fantasy coming up.
I doubt next year, though. He just seems like the classic now. He's just got to get in a good program, because as we already knew coming into the NFL, he had played frighteningly little football.
Yeah,
where he barely played in college. Now in 2 years, he's barely even played in the NFL. And it seems like he basically needs to get Jordan Loved, where he needs to like go sit on like a good scheme for 3 years and just like learn. It's a really bad, bleak situation for Trey Lance, despite the dual threat. Like, he's got big issues.
And I don't
know. I wouldn't be drafting Trey Lance in best ball draft. No? I'll say that. No, I really wouldn't. Man. I don't think he's going to – I think he's going to start like 3 or 4 games in 2023.
What if he lands in Tampa? He's starting 16 games in Tampa.
No, I feel like that's a class where he'll like get hurt. Like, it's a horrible offensive line. Like, he'll be asked to do way too much. He really needs to, I think, be a backup on a good team. If he ends up in Tampa, like a situation where there's like going to be like expectations, he needs to be somewhere where there's like no expectation. I mean, there's no expectations for the Bucs in general in 2023, but like, he's going to be expected. He needs to be somewhere where he's not expected to lead the offense, I think, in 2023, because it's just going to be a horrible, horrible situation.
I'm trying to think of where that could be. I'm having trouble.
He needs to like go be the backup for like Sean McVay or something.
I kind of had that thought too.
He really needs to be on a Kyle Shanahan. Wait, crap.
we'll edit that out. Don't worry.
Yeah, we will edit that out because yikes. He was with the guy that he needed to be with, and it didn't work at all.
Didn't work. But Brock Purdy is literally perfect for the Shanahan offense. So
he is, except for it's going to fail hard, man. It's going to fail Yeah. I mean, people forget Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard both looked good for like 4 games. And like, he's really good at making like 7th rounders cool for like a month. But there's a reason why he became obsessed with the idea of getting a franchise quarterback and did something so risky for Trey Lance. It's because he understood there are limits to that approach.
But have you considered the dog levels in Brock Purdy?
I know that Geno Smith said it's not a real stat, but the number of turnover-worthy plays from Brock Purdy that were not turnovers was mega yikes.
I came away thinking, oh, the box score will reflect that Brock Purdy turned the ball over 8 times today, and it would be 0.
Always 0. He kept getting away with it, and apparently has convinced Sean McVay. Yeah. Someone who has not convinced their head coach Denny about their special skills is Josh Allen, with Sean McDermott just point blank saying he needs to run less in 2023 and basically like trotting out all the old cliches about running quarterbacks that works well for a while, but it catches up to you. Like the hits take a toll. It's just like not so a way to play if you're going to be a franchise player. And like he kind of said this last year, and then he just kept doing it because they need him to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Like, the only reason they went 13-3 was because he kept doing it. Like they had no offensive identity last year, which maybe you could argue was partly the fault that he just kept doing that. And like when the second anything goes wrong, he takes off and runs. But
right.
So kind of like good luck with this one, basically.
Yeah. Here's the Sean McDermott quote for those who didn't see it. Quote, "I don't think that's a healthy way to play quarterback in this league. And it's undefeated that things are going to happen when you play that style. We have to get that adjusted, and it's never going to go completely away, but it has to get where it's workable." I mean, it's very vague and sort of weirdly worded, but
I actually say it's pretty direct, even though like the sentiment, it couldn't be clearer. Like could not be clearer.
I mean, first of all, none of that's true.
No, it's actually not.
Sorry. Sorry, Sean. I know if you're listening, that's everything you said is incorrect. But for fantasy, it matters a lot. If I could just emphasize that with some numbers real quick.
Yeah, I mean, if they actually follow through on it, this would be like kind of like a doomsday level event.
Oh, yeah. Like,
can't happen, basically.
Horrific. So 2022, Josh Allen was fifth in quarterback rushing attempts. His 11 rushes inside the 5-yard line were second only to Jalen Hurts, who had 20. Josh Allen scored 4 of his 7 rushing touchdowns on those attempts inside the 5. He had 85 expected fantasy points on the ground last year. That was 4th among all quarterbacks. That's a chunk of change when you're talking about his fantasy output, right? So if the Bills follow through on this, it would be a major problem for where Josh Allen is drafted. Now, I will say, I don't know if they can follow through on this, besides benching Josh Allen. That's the way you follow through with it.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to just totally reprogram Josh Allen. And again, they don't even want him. He knows it sounds good to say this. Like, this is what a responsible head coach would say. But like when it's 3rd and 6 and like, well, we don't have a good play yet again. Hopefully Josh just tucks it and runs on this. And then he does and gets 19 yards.
That's their whole offense.
Sean McDermott will say nothing.
The offense is Josh Allen making Superman plays to gain 7 yards on 3rd and 6 and then ripping one down the middle to Stephon Diggs. That's the offense.
You could just see the absence of Brian Daboll last year where there was not like a second level to that plan. Whereas in like 2020, 2021, there was last year, especially towards the end of the season, the Bills became one of these teams. Like, I'm not really sure how the Bills are like supposed to be gaining yards right now because they don't have a running game. They don't have a second receiving threat. Like they're just constantly needing Josh Allen to be Superman. And thankfully he was, but like they're going to need a second level to this offense if they're trying to get this out of Josh Allen's system because they will be down so extraordinarily bad.
A second receiver would be good.
Really, really good. Gabe Davis was framed. It was the ankle injury.
It was the ankle. He lost his ankle at some point.
No, it was the ankle. He's going to come roaring back. You'll see.
Actually, I kind of am on board.
Yeah, he won't. Would you rather have Gabe Davis or Nelson Agholor in 2023?
Oh, my. That's insulting to Gabe Davis.
All right, good.
Come on. Good. Right. I go Gabe Davis. I'll assume that ankle really, really did him in.
Did the Bills sign a receiver? I don't think they did. I'm looking real quick.
Yeah. They could draft one. That'd be cool.
They could. They might need to. I mean, they didn't sign anybody unless you count Deontay Hardy, which I don't.
Yeah, you don't. You don't. No.
No. No. He's a guy. He's like their new Isaiah McKenzie.
No. Wait a second. Wait. This guy was top 10 in yards per route run 2 years ago.
He's the new Isaiah McKenzie. He's like 5. He's literally 5'6". Like he's and.
I didn't know you were so discriminatory against short people.
And that's usually your role.
That is my begging teams to stop drafting short players.
Oh, come on, man. Yeah. Well, we'll be right back after this. New MLB season, new rules, new stars. So pair it with the RotoWorld Baseball Draft Guide. Get all the player profiles, rankings, and projections you need to hit your draft out of the park. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/draft guide and use promo code PENNANT25 to save 25% at checkout. That is promo code PENNANT25 to save 25% at checkout. And don't forget, download the RotoWorld app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Denny, my home league baseball team's already in crisis. Well, we had to draft a week early. I'm not going to blame anyone, but my brother-in-law, I had to go on a business trip. So we had to draft last week instead of this week. And in the intervening 10 days between the draft and the regular season, Rhys Hoskins has already blown out his knee, and Wander Franco's mysterious quad soreness from last year has resurfaced.
Oh, boy.
So I'm looking to make a trade if anyone's listening.
Well, look, that sounds like a great start to what will be an excruciating grind of a season.
I'm not looking to make a trade because I planned ahead. I've got Juan Miranda to plug into my first base spot. So, all the haters who said we were done when Rhys went down, you're wrong.
I have a question about the pitch clock. Are they not going to show the pitch clock on TV?
I think there's a big debate over this because a lot of people find it annoying and like stressful. And I think MLB doesn't like it because it's like not aesthetically pleasing. Okay. So I don't think they're going to show it on TV is the early consensus. But I also think they don't know. I wouldn't like it. I don't want to know.
It's a critical part of the game now. It's going to determine games.
Just you're a football guy. Just leave us alone.
Get as many numbers on the screen as possible.
Us alone. We're going through enough as baseball fans.
Feel bad for you guys. Everybody craps on baseball.
Come back. Come back, man. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. Come on, come back.
If they shorten the season to like 30 games, I'm in.
I thought you were saying they shorten the games. They already did that.
No. Shorten the games. Shorten the season. I'm in.
You're fired. No, we don't want you. We don't want you. No one wanted DJ Shark. Took him over a week, Denny, to find a new home in the first wave of free agency. Another reason like the C word's been thrown around a lot is because no one's getting like multi-year deals or anything. No one wanted DJ Shark for more than 1 year unless he signed him. What was his deal?
His deal was one year. I can tell you, he signed with
1 year, $8.5 million or something like that.
It was a 1 year, $5 million contract.
Yikes! Should get more than that, but not on the Lions anymore. He's on the Carolina Panthers. They have Adam Thielen. They have Terrace Marshall. They have Shai Smith. They have Laviska Shenault. What can we possibly say about DJ Shark of the Panthers? Which I guess is not a lot. We still don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I guess it's going to be CJ Stroud probably. But what can we say about DJ Shark, who still has so much promise and potential, but now he's just like on the merry-go-round. He's been injured a lot. What is there to say about DJ Shark heading into his age 27 season?
I mean, he is among the premier downfield pass catchers in the league, according to pretty much every measure. Pro Football Focus rates him among the top 10 as far as their grade for his targets of over 20%, 20 yards, sorry. Last year he caught 8 of his 15 downfield passes for 252 yards and 2 touchdowns. So pretty efficient there as the Lions' main downfield guy. And you have to remember, he missed like a huge chunk of the season. He only played in 11 games and really only played like 9 full games because of injuries. So he actually, I think he's shown promise in that role. Now, beyond that role, I don't think that he can be used as anything resembling like a wide receiver one, like a traditional guy who can be used all over the field. I think that's going to be his role. But the Panthers could have done a lot worse in trying to kind of cobble together, I think, a receiving core that can replace DJ Moore. And, you know, they could add in the draft as well.
They don't have a ton of draft ammo. I think Adam, our producer, pointed out last show, they only have like four picks in the top 100 or something.
I'm not as down on the Panthers pass catching group as most folks, I guess. I do think that Chark is a sneaky signing. I kind of like it.
Who's going to have more PPR points, Adam Thielen or DJ Chark?
I would have to imagine Thielen, just because he's scamming. He's scamming. Come on. He's gonna just be peppered with 6 yard outs all season. So we get the PPR scam there.
PPR and the touchdown scam, because I just think he's now earned a reputation as the red zone guy.
Sure. When a player can take on like the entire downfield pass catching role, that is valuable. It is a valuable role to have on your own. So if Chark enters the season, we're still obviously a long way away according to my calendar.
Can't argue with the analytics.
No, we looked hard at the calendar before we started the show. And if he enters the season as their only downfield guy, I think that could be pretty interesting. It would be volatile, but interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of time to add. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to be the receiver. Adam points out, here are their picks. Number one, number 39, number 93 via the 49ers, and then number 114. They only have two other picks beyond that. They've got a really, really small draft pick cash, and they have a lot of problems. I mean, receiver is one of their major problems. And, like, 39, that's, like, a lot of times – the beginning of day two, like the first seven or eight picks, a lot of times is like receiver zone. So there will probably be some like name prospect receivers available then. So they could do it. They probably do need to do it, man. They can't go in, especially with a rookie quarterback. They can't go in with this group they got here. It's not
great, I will say.
Not even close to good enough, people are saying. They're probably not done adding. We don't even know for sure it's going to be CJ Stroud, although the betting markets are coalescing in that direction.
Yeah, but I'd have to think so.
One direction Sean Payton is not coalescing, Denny, is loving Russell Wilson. Monday he said Jarrett Stidham's going to be a big part of this football team or something to that effect. Clearly, there's not quarterback competition or anything like that, but Russ, he's recovering from a knee scope. The guy aggressively signed Jarrett Stidham for like over $5 million a year. Now he's talking him up. I don't know. Why are we talking
about this? What is it about this Stidham guy that coaches love so much? I mean, what does he do? Like, he must look amazing in practice. I could tell you that, because Josh McDaniels fell for him. It looks like Sean Payton's falling for him.
He also just literally looks amazing. He's like 6'3", 220. He's like the prototype quarterback.
He does. He certainly looks like a quarterback. If I were to see that guy on the street, I would say, hey, that guy, I don't know who that is, but he surely looks like a quarterback to me.
That guy probably played quarterback for Auburn, and you're just right every time you make that guess.
Yeah, and he has, you know, I get it. He has the hair coming out of the helmet. It looks solid. He has a solid look. He has a solid aesthetic, I think is what we're saying. I just don't get how beyond that one game where he went ballistic for Vegas. I don't get what he has. But yeah, I mean, I think the over under probably should be set at like week 9 as to when Jarrett Stidham takes over for Russell.
Come on, get out of here. I mean, I'm a hater, but that's just ridiculous. That's way too much Russ hating right there.
Wait, week a second. 9?
So you think he's going to get benched? Do you think he's going to get benched? Or is this what you're saying?
I think a guy like Sean Payton carries enough power into this role that he's going to bench Russell Wilson when things get bad. And maybe Wilson will reclaim the job after a good week in practice or whatever, a good talking to, you know, things of that nature. But I think Payton, they hired Payton to say, get this right. Like right the ship, please. Because we don't know what we're doing. We just hired
the ship with the guy making like $40 million a year and not Jarrett Stidham's, probably, I guess.
So Nathaniel Hackett never had the authority to even tell Russell Wilson what to do.
Couldn't even tell him where to park.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Didn't know where his office was. Couldn't tell him what to do.
He got kicked out of his office by Russell Wilson. Barely an exaggeration.
Like, you know, had to go through Russell Wilson's people in order to talk to his own quarterback. Like, you know, that's not happening with Sean Payton. Sean Payton, I it seems like he's not coming into this being the biggest Russ fan. Russell Wilson's going to have to prove himself. And I think that the way that he talks about Stidham shows that there is a leash. There was no leash last year. There's a leash this year.
Yeah, I do think he's mostly just trying to scare Russell Wilson. I don't think he has any actual intentions to bench him, but like he's certainly giving him an icy greeting as the new head coach. Really, 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 really icy. And yeah, basically, I think he's establishing there's going to be no shenanigans this year. But I'm sure secretly hoping, like, Russ, please be good.
Yeah.
Because I'm finished if you're not. I've done enough fishing. I can't go back to working on Fox. Please, please.
Wait, no, I don't. I think Peyton is in a good position to show the team and to show Russell Wilson and ownership and everybody, I'm the captain now. Like we're doing things my way. And you hired me to do so, and I'm a big enough name where I can do anything I want. I can bench your $40 million quarterback. It doesn't matter. You can't do anything about it. I think that he'll wield his power like that.
There's some stuff going on that is not up for debate, where there are some dynamics at play here, and Russ is hopefully getting the message, because we have. Real quick, they also said they're not going to trade Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton. Who do we think? I mean, Jerry Jeudy seems kind of tailor-made for Sean Payton,
I'm pretty excited about Jeudy. I don't think Sutton can get back to where he was 2 or 3 years ago, but we've talked about Sutton on the show, but Jeudy, man, I hope he stays. I think that could be really, really exciting for fantasy purposes and real purposes if you're into that sort of thing. You know, they want a first rounder for Jeudy, and that is literally never going to happen. Like, no team, I don't think a team would deal a second rounder for Jerry Jeudy.
So no, even if they thought, like, secretly that he was still like a first round guy, you can't like trade a first round pick for a guy who's been hurt like that and has produced so unevenly. Okay. Like, yeah, that would not be happening.
So I guess he's stuck. I guess they're stuck in that offense, which should be good for him.
I wonder if he was just trying to say it's the classic, they're just announcing they're not going to trade them because you need to up your trade offers if you want them. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't seem. I didn't think it ever made any sense. So I don't think. Yeah, he signed Marquez Callaway. He loves former Saints more than life itself already, which was the easiest prediction in the face of
that concerns me. That concerns me a little. Like,
I mean, even the best coaches just cannot get enough of their former players.
It's true. I mean, to a lesser extent, he's doing kind of that thing that Matt Rhule did in Carolina, where Matt Rhule just kept getting Baylor players.
Baylor and Temple, yeah.
And Temple. Yeah. Like, and then like both players and their agents were like, I don't understand what's happening here. Yeah. Like, I can't even get in the door unless I show that my guy went to Temple or Baylor. Anyway, yeah, that to me, that doesn't smell right. It feels like a cop out sometimes with personnel.
No, it is. It's just instead of like evaluating guys, they just like want they don't want to do a new evaluation. Basically. And it's literally every coach. It's insane. But
it's true.
Jerry, I promised the people you would talk about Samaje Perine.
Yeah.
What did you want to say about this?
So, you know, look, this is important. Perine said that a big part of the reason he signed with Denver is because Sean Payton talked about using multiple backs and like wanting a split backfield. And I know that, you know, you may see that and roll your eyes and say, well, if Javonte Williams is healthy, then it won't be a split backfield. I tend to think that there's something to that according to how Payton operated in New Orleans. Okay. Like he doesn't have a history, really any history of saying, this guy is my guy. I'm giving it to him 25 times. There's also this, and this just came across the old timeline while we were recording. Broncos general manager George Patton said of Javonte Williams, if he'll be ready for the start of the season, quote, we won't know that for a while. He adds he's making, quote, great strides in recovery from
J.K. Dobbins season, basically, is what he's saying.
So I think, really, I mean, if you're doing best ball, if you're a sicko doing best ball stuff right now, Perine is pretty, pretty, pretty appealing. And I think the hype train could get him to a ridiculous ADP come summer.
That's what I was going to say. the fear with some IGP Ryan is that he won't be zero RB.
Right.
He's going to end up getting priced into like the dead zone. And
sure.
You want to get in on the PPR scam, but like the ADP just might be too ridiculous. Because this be, I mean, the PPR thing is happening. I mean, this is the Pierre Thomas coach. It's the guy who made Alvin Kamara on RB1, even though he ran the ball like 11 or 12 times a game. Like the PPR scam, it's coming. And we have to get ready. We have to prepare our families, prepare our homes. but like the ADP could just be like too high. Because the big problem with Samaje Perine, Denny, is that he's not good.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
Well, thankfully, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. It actually doesn't matter at all. So,
yeah, but I was gonna be mad, but no, you're probably right.
It really, really got to monitor the ADP on some IGP. Right, I'm sure he's a value right now. Well, I don't even know if he is. Maybe people are having like Javonte Williams panic. I don't know what like the underdog data says right now.
Yeah, it's
only there's some way to find out.
There is no way. We're gonna have to call underdog.
Yeah, I know. We gotta call Josh or Hayden.
Yeah, I'm gonna get Josh Norris on the phone right now.
Yeah, he's gonna fax us the data. I'm the fax machine.
But I definitely could see me being like, come August, being like, I'm completely out on P. Ryan.
Yeah, you'll be into whatever like the disgusting like third back is on the Broncos. And do you guys know they re-signed Mike Boone?
Mike Boone signed elsewhere. Hold on.
No, I'm saying. In training camp, you know, they traded for Mike Boone after they traded for Mike Boone or whatever on like July 29th. You'll be all in.
Mike Boone never goes away.
Or Tony Jones. I was trying to think of a Saints running back that they could resign. Or they could sign, and they already did. Yeah. Tony Jones, who
100%.
No offense to the young man, is really not good.
It's the analytics are not kind to Tony Jones.
Very, very poor on Tony Jones. I'm assuming with your article, Denny, four underrated running backs setting in a 23, you're going to tell us who the analytics say are underrated. And first off, just take us through the conceit of the article really quick, and then take us into your first back that we're going to talk about who is underrated heading into 2023.
Yeah. So I looked at some of what we in the industry call peripheral stats. Stuff that may paint a slightly different story than you see if you're looking at like, you know, yards per carry and things of that nature. So I looked at these running backs' yards before contact per carry, the yards after contact per carry. So basically the yards before contact, you're looking at guys who run to daylight, who can find the gap, who can hit the hole with some force. And, you know, I think that you'll see that with some of these guys I'm going to mention. And of course, yards after contact, these are tough runners. I looked at breakaway rate, which is a measurement created by Pro Football Focus that points to a running back's ability to rip off long gains and deliver explosive plays. And then I looked a little bit at yards per route run to see how efficient they have been.
Good metrics that really do tell an interesting tale.
Yeah, just something to grab to grab, see exactly how efficient they've been with limited opportunity, because obviously like James Cook is atop the list here, and James Cook popped in a lot of these categories. He was second in yards before contact per carry, 19th, not as good, yards after contact per carry, top 10 in yards per route run as a pass catcher. So this is on a limited sample, only 89 rushing attempts. I get that. It was rarely used as a pass catcher, but he did a lot with a little. And We talked about James Cook last week a lot, I think, with Kyle. And with Damian Harris signing, obviously, it definitely changes the way you view James Cook. And I think his ADP at running back 27 or whatever it is, probably too high. And I would hope that will drop. But the hope is here, it's not that you're drafting James Cook thinking he's just going to instantly be the lead back in Buffalo. It's that if he does get that role, he's proven to be pretty good, and we can hopefully bank on that expanding into a larger workload.
So, James Cook, I want James Cook to not be over. It won't be, right? There's just no way. Damian Harris is not. We already talked about that. Like,
I mean, I feel weird because I do see folks I respect and, you know, analysts I respect saying Damian Harris is the real deal, and he's gonna.
It's pretty good.
succeed in this offense? I don't know, man.
It's just a kiss of death with James Cook. You never, ever want to be the pass catching back as a rookie. You just don't want to, because no matter what, then doesn't matter. Ah, I got a pass catcher. That's how the coaches all talk. And no matter what, you will not get a chance to be the early down back after that.
Next guy I have is Rashad Penny. And I'm not going to get too far into the weeds on Penny, because if you've played fantasy football over the past two seasons, you know that Penny has been hyper efficient as a rusher and as a pass catcher whenever he's healthy. And of course, that's the catch, is whenever he's healthy. But you don't really, you don't just have to go back to 2022 or 2021 to see that. He was super efficient in 2019.
His entire career, both the boomer and the advanced stats, shockingly efficient.
Look, I said this on the fantasy football happy hour last week, and I was expecting pushback or maybe shock or maybe a tomato to be thrown at me at some point. But I said that when he's healthy, Rashad Penny's the best rusher in the NFL. And I stand by that. I think that he is that kind of runner. And in this offense could be incredible. And the best thing is, if you're willing to go in on him, you're not going to have to pay a steep price as far as redraft goes, because people are freaked out by the injury history, and rightfully so.
Matthew Berry, apparently a scholar and a gentleman, because I would have slapped you right across the face. really enjoyed your work on that, by the way. There are a lot of YouTube videos up above.
Thanks.
You're stopping by the studio to talk with Matthew and Jay and Connor. So really good stuff. But yeah, I mean, he actually is one of the better pure runners in the NFL.
But, I know we say we're almost contractually obligated to say Nick Chubb is the best pure rusher in the NFL. I'm taking that away. I'm taking that title away from Nick Chubb.
Don't take that from him.
I'm sorry, Nick. I know Nick is a big fan of the show.
I'll be honest, I was kind of zoned out. Did you talk about Dalvin Cook already? Or not Dalvin? No, sorry, J.K. Dobbins. And I was zoned out because I got a message that I was on the clock and I really needed to pick in this baseball draft.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Enough of baseball.
I don't think you talked about J.K. Dobbins, though.
I didn't. Not yet. I haven't talked about J.K. Dobbins. So Dobbins, after some stops and starts and some difficulties last year, and if you drafted him, it was a tough sled. Tough ride for J.K. Dobbins drafters, but he eventually was really good. He ended 2022 fifth among all backs in yards before contact per carry, and he was tied for 11th in yards after contact. His breakaway rate, folks, was seventh among all running backs from week 14 to 17. And if you were able to survive the lack of production over the first 3 months of the season for Dobbins, when you got to week 14 to 17, it paid off. 397 yards on 57 rushes. That's 7.1 yards per carry. No running back over that time had more rushes of over 10 yards than Dobbins. So I think that he showed enough, way more than enough, to say, hey, he's back. He is a really good runner. And in a post-Lamar offense, could actually get more opportunity.
And this was as – you could almost visibly see him limping even when he played.
Yeah.
Like, he still didn't look healthy. He looked healthier as he got going down the stretch, like you said. The one concern, I guess, of course, is that is what the Greg Roman offense does for running backs. And now Greg Roman is gone. And we're not expecting really like the wheel to be reinvented if Lamar remains the quarterback, which I said earlier in the show isn't going to happen. I might have gotten a little carried away. But that is a big part of what Greg Roman does, is spring these gigantic holes for his running backs. That'd be the only touch of gray for J.K. Dobbins, I would say.
That's right. And then my last guy on this piece, which you can find on the site, NBC Sports.
People aren't ready for this one, by the way. They're not ready for the last one.
No, the people are not. And I'm going to have to ask you to sit down. It's Jaylen Warren, who is the RB2 for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I take no pleasure in saying, well, maybe a little pleasure in saying that Warren was, by nearly every measure, way better than Najee Harris in 2022. His breakaway rate of 25% was significantly higher than Najee Harris's rate of 13%. The good news for I guess Jaylen Warren going forward is that he forced the Steelers, and this is something, because the Steelers are stuck in their ways. Like, they have their guy. And they're gonna go with their guy no matter what's happening on the field. It doesn't matter. They forced the Steelers to share the backfield a little bit down the stretch, a little bit. Okay. I'm not saying that it was a split backfield, but a little. And Jalen Warren got more opportunity and was good. He was good as a pass catcher as well. So someone to watch for the zero RB sickos out there.
Yeah, you could almost see that one happening in real time where just if you watch the Steelers games, Jalen Warren just looked better than Najee Harris. And all this, all the peripheral stats, he popped more than
Najee Harris. I will say I wasn't aware until recently that Jalen Warren is 5'8".
That's fine for a running back.
Is it fine? Yeah, can a 5'8" guy withstand a full workload if Najee Harris gets hurt?
Remember the man by the name of Maurice Jones-Drew?
Oh, well, he's different. Come on.
He is built different.
He was built different.
He was just literally built different.
I mean, he's such a bowling ball. Yeah. Jalen Warren has a little bowling ball to him.
I'll yeah, 5'8" is actually not – like, it's he maybe won another inch or two, but that's an acceptable height for a running back. And, I mean, with Najee Harris, again, for some reason, played through a Lisfranc injury last year. Yeah. Maybe I'm assuming he's not going to do that again this year. So maybe he'll be better and more efficient because looked like a career just going in the wrong direction in 2022 for Najee.
It didn't look good. I will say Jalen Warren will probably be like a premier bench stash for me this draft season.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good prediction heading into 2023. A very good prediction. Heading into the 3 o'clock Eastern hour on Monday, March 27th, is that this podcast is over.
It's true. That is a great prediction.
That's a great prediction. We've given it our all. Yeah, check out Denny's running back article on the site. Really, really good stuff. We got a lot of stuff on the site. Owners meetings this week. There's always a lot of news coming out of that. Keep it locked to our news feed. Going to have my coach rankings coming out, I believe, hopefully a week from today. I'm trying to hold myself to that by admitting that publicly.
Good luck, man. Good luck with that. That always draws the most reasonable fan responses.
It does, yeah. I'm still all the Giants fans, though, have been apologizing for being mad about Joe Judge.
You were too generous. You should have had Judge at 32 every year. He should have been 32.
I know. I was too generous. And yet, come on. Yeah, no one sent me a fax. The fax machine has not been humming except for my underdog ADP data.
Thank you, Josh Norris.
Shouts to Josh and Hayden. Shouts to Denny Carter for doing the show. Shouts to you for listening and for listening later this week when we will be back.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.